Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's Green Thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants, indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. See homedepot.com/delivery for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Scrum Down NBC Sports Rugby Podcast. I am your host with the most, Alex Cubicera, and it is great to be back, everyone. Lots to talk about. Rugby World Cup 2021 is heating up. We had the quarterfinals this weekend across Peacock TV and CNBC, and we got a special treat this week. We have Abby Gastidis, who's been breaking the games down on CNBC, to come and sit through and talk through all of the quarterfinal action. We're going to discuss the USA-Canada game, post-mortem on their World Cup, and then look ahead to the big semi-finals. And then after that, we're joined by Bryce Campbell, USA rugby star, as the men's USA Rugby 15s have landed in Dubai. They're about to start their three-game World Cup qualification repechage. They've got a big one against Kenya this weekend to get that off the book. And we're going to hear from Bryce from inside the camp, talk about the game on the weekend and lots more. But for now, let's get into our Rugby World Cup 2021 debrief with myself and Abby Gastidis. And we are joined by USA Rugby Olympian Abby Gastidis, NBC Sports pundit as well. You've been covering the Rugby World Cup 2021 on CNBC, mainly the US games, but welcome to the show.
Right here from this very space on occasion, actually. And
for those watching, it's not a bad little studio setup, you know? We're doing the best we can here, but the home studio, I'm pretty proud of it.
It's not bad, just obviously got to change this thing out. It's NBC time, although Scrum Down with the host and the most.
That's me, mate, the host with the most. We'll have Scrum Down with Abby Gastidis probably one day, not too far in the future if you keep doing such a good job on CNBC. But Abby, let's get into it. You know, what did you make of the quarterfinals this weekend?
Top four teams going through to the semis and no underdogs coming through. It's exactly what we would have predicted. It's what all the bettors were after, the 1-4 seeds, and pretty unremarkable quarterfinals for the most part. We've talked about the US-Canada game a little bit, and I'm sure we'll dive into it a little deeper, but New Zealand, France, England, all pretty much you would have bet money from the get that they were going to be in a semifinal, let alone a final. And then it was that Canada-USA coming in for that fourth spot.
And, you know, look at this. The top four seem to be a clear cut above the rest. And, you know, that is probably the effect of professionalism. You know, you look at three of the teams, definitely France, England, New Zealand, remarkable, like how far they've progressed in since the last World Cup with professionalism and time committed to their programs. And then you really got to credit Canada for sneaking in that top four bracket. This is a team that wasn't in the semifinals last time. They've now sort of established themselves in that top four picture.
A few changes to the tournament style this go around. In 2017, there were no quarterfinals, right? So you make it out of your pool play based on bonus points. And Canada, unfortunately, didn't get a bonus point last time. So us United States snuck into that last quarter semifinal spot in 2017. So this time around, though, Canada absolutely well-deserved, like a dream run for them throughout pool play and then a quarterfinal. And honestly, the matchup they probably wanted in quarters. And I mean, you can say the same for the U.S., but Canada have done so well just getting their official head coach in June when they played those test matches in New Zealand. And well done to them. They're on form. I think it's a tough ask ahead for a semifinal. I think, you know, everyone other than the Canadians might be cheering for England and have their bets on England, but seriously, well done to them.
And then let's look into that United States-Canada game. And, you know, it was definitely a game that, you know, Rob Kane on the last show last week said that it was against a team they thought they could beat, they believe they could beat. They'd had a game to see where they would go wrong against them in that first game. And they had an opportunity to go out there and try and put a lot of things right. What did you make of it?
A competitive first 40 minutes, definitely not the best we've seen from Canada. Conditions, definitely a factor. Really wet. We saw in that England game right before in their quarterfinal, it was dumping. And then it seemed to clear up a little bit, but that slick ball, Canada had so many handling errors, really kept the United States in it. However, from the United States perspective, they were able to hold on to the ball a little bit. They had that massive moment where we thought Hope Rogers was in. Joy Neville said, hey, ball went backwards off the flanker. And then TMO comes in, changes it, overrules, and pulling back that try, which again, in the earlier match, they also had a try reversed. And we know in rugby, it's a game of moments, and kind of took the wind out of their sails a bit, but well done to Canada. And I think they proved that they're in that elite status, able to finish games. We haven't seen that from the United States. 40 minutes, well done, but why can't they do it for 80 minutes? That is keeping them from being in the match. And then so many errors allowing Canada to just capitalize.
I completely agree. I think, you know, the first half, they actually managed to make the territory possession competitive, which is what got away from them in that first half the week before. Canada made a lot of handling errors, which kept them in them, but the US had to capitalize. They have to capitalize. Like, you can't just hang in games. They actually have to start early if they start well, taking shots and trying to build a score. And I think, you know, Canada went up early. The US responded well. And at halftime, it was reasonably competitive. But if you trace back a lot of Canada's scores, Canada had very few line breaks, very few times where they, you know, broke through the field, got down to the 22 and then finished them. A lot of the time Canada got their field position and territory came off errors from the US in their own half, an inability to exit under pressure at times, inviting the Canadians back on them, then a penalty or something. And then you would get rinse, wash, repeat in that driving maul, close quarter game, which especially in the wet weather, as you saw England really grind out Australia, just was too tough an ask for them. And then, and once the game got away from them a little bit, it just looked like Canada felt composed enough and comfortable enough to sort of see it through and get the W.
Definitely. So many errors from the US. I think all three scoring opportunities Canada had in that second half came off an error from the United States, whether it was missing a kickoff, simple things like that, or just penalties. You know, committing those penalties, you're just allowing the opposition to come down into the 22. Like you said, Canada didn't even have to earn the right to get down there. They didn't bash. They didn't hold on to ball for 10 phases and, you know, smash down the U.S. and build that pressure. It was all off of United States mistakes. And that's something that's really let them down in this tournament, is that inability to, you know, have that discipline and decrease their errors, whether forced or unforced.
I agree. I think you hit the nail on the head when you said they're not an 80-minute team. And I think that that inconsistency and inability to be where they need to be for 80 minutes is why they only won one game in this World Cup. And, you know, like, this is what I think we should get onto now is, like, you know, big picture, it doesn't look great for the United States. You look at that, they had moments, there's things we've been able to cheer about. We've talked in this podcast about the positives. We've highlighted a lot of the things they did well. But you've got to be realistic that they must have been expecting more from them. I was definitely expecting more from them. They had a five-year build. They've got players playing in the Premier 15. They've had a lot of time, the most time together they've ever had. So you're thinking it's an evolution of the game, but still sort of not able to sort of make that next jump into that sort of, you know, top four, top five, top six, even real category in the world right now.
It's tough to even put them in top six when you lose to Italy, and Italy had a decent tournament, and people will say that they have professionalized recently, but is that really the only excuse that we have, is that we're not fully professionalized? Like you mentioned, all those women going and playing 15s, they're being exposed to great rugby. And that is an individual aspect. However, they're coming together. They were together for months on end. Just this year alone, they've played more test matches than ever before, still on the lower end compared to the other teams. But coaching, definitely a factor. You've had 5 years. We mentioned COVID definitely in there in the mix, but all teams went through that. And I don't know what the next steps are. I think keeping the sevens players out of the mix is an issue. Had I been in charge of the program, I would have definitely had them. Because we don't, looking back at those games, you don't have any true finishers on that field. I think Janine Detivo, she had moments of brilliance, exposed on defense at times, but, you know, put Christy Kershey on the edge, Ilona Marr, like, we know what they're capable of, and they will bring that X factor that we're missing. Especially having those back three, our kicking game isn't the best, and I'm digressing into more specific points. But back to big picture, it's 2025 coming up is the next World Cup, 3 years. So, you know, 2014 to 2017, it was 3 years. And that was an excuse in 2017 why we weren't, why we didn't medal. And I don't want that to be an excuse again. It's not good enough. It's not, everyone is under the same time constraints here. And so we have the resources, but I think we need to rebuild the program. And what does that mean as far as coaching, players? Just broaden it up. Let's see all the talent. Bring in as many people as you can. But then, you know, pick your 40 people, your 35. Pick that pool and just concentrate on them. I think we were handing caps out like candy on Halloween at times throughout this last couple years. And I think you brought me in to be the bearer of truth.
The grim reaper having a status. You don't hold any punches, as someone who knows pretty well.
Don't at me.
I've been aware that, you know, you can be blunt and brutally honest, but I think that's what needs to be assessed right now. Because listen, there's a home World Cup here down the horizon, and the US cannot afford to fall behind anymore. It's similar to other men's and women's programs and sevens and 15s and everything. They can't get left behind at the moment. So coaching has to be a massive factor. Like, I'm sorry, but the United States is at the point now where we can advertise to the world, see which coaches are willing to come here, move here, live here, and pick the best of the best to try and invest resources in a program which needs to develop, which needs to trend towards success for a home World Cup, and also just for the growth of the game over here and where we need it to be. The other thing that I like that you touched on was the sevens players. Look at all the other countries in the world. They've got their sevens players out there. Like, how many full-time professional athletes, female rugby players, do the United States have? Mainly the sevens players.
Seven.
You know what I mean? There's some that kind of went semi-pro in Allianz 15 or Premier 15s, but the majority of that professional top-tier talent pool is in the sevens. Why would you not share your talent between the two programs? Look at New Zealand. Their backline is absolutely popping off with their sevens players right now. Do you know England have a couple in there? Canada, France, you know? Like, there's a theme here. Like, let's use the professionalization. Whatever the decision was to do that, I think you can always criticize, and I would have thought it would have been better to have them than not have them. Completely agree. A Kersh on the wing, a Loner maybe even in the back row or something. You know, Jordan Mattias was one, and Alev actually stood out as game-changing players for them, and I think the more that would be there would do that. But if you look at it now in hindsight, there's no denying that that was a bad decision. And I think going forward, that has to be something that has to be addressed. I think both programs can work together. I think they both can synergize each other at times. And I don't think you're cannibalizing one or the other by having those players play both. Because other than like the top tier of the men's 15s game, it seems to be the norm that people play both. And I think we have to embrace that here to make sure that we put our best foot forward for the future.
Totally agreed. And you'll get those people saying, but they're two completely different games. And I would never argue with that, right?
Yeah, like, we know.
Right? Like, all day, they're very different. But it comes down to skills and time with the ball in your hand and that high performance environment that sets those sevens players apart here in the United States. Like we've already mentioned, for France, you have Drouin. She's leading the charge at fly half for them, and she's doing a phenomenal job. But again, in a full-time environment, and then, I mean, across the board, the captain of the seven scene for New Zealand, Harini, is, you know, playing open side flanker for them. And again, standing out, and they're able to cross over. But the sevens players in the United States, they are the only full-time rugby programs. Here, we play club rugby, especially our Women's Premier League. It's only 3-4 months out of the year, and it's in the springtime, and then you play a couple months of sevens, and then you're off. But those women on the sevens side, they are in training Monday to Friday, year-round, barring a couple of months, depending on how the season is going. And I truly think that would bring them up a notch, as well as just overall strategy and tactic, but that's a different
conversation. Yeah, I think the detail, could definitely improve. I think, you know, and that just comes with more time, but also better coaching, like without trying to be harsh in any way, just that's just the reality. Like, look at England's detail right now, look at France, even Canada's detail, like their mole, that's proper good detail there. And that's really what's been a bedrock of them getting to this next level in the competition, is strong, well-drilled set piece, good kicking game, decently disciplined defense. And, you know, the rest will come as it goes. But if you don't have those foundations and you have a lot of time together, I think you really have to reassess what you're doing. But Abby, I think that's the US sort of wrapped up. You know, it's sad to see them out of this World Cup, learning experience. And I think the bright side is a lot of the squad will stay together for the next World Cup. So by the time you get to that next World Cup, you'll get some experience and a lot more caps on the field together, which is something, you know, Rob Kane touched on this, that the United States not really had, which I think will be good for the program. But I think on a whole, we sort of summed up the ins and outs of what's going on there. But now I want to look at these semifinals coming up. It's probably the most competitive games we've had in this World Cup by some way, other than maybe England, France and the pool stages. This is what people came to see. Let's look at England v Canada first. What do you make of that game?
England v Canada. I mean, it's hard to argue with you about it, but I think we can agree on this one. But both forward dominant, well-drilled teams, as you've just mentioned. And we've seen the driving ball from both, so it'll be exciting to see. But I think England will have the edge. First, they have the experience in these semifinals, in finals, in World Cups, and that is massive. You can't replicate that. And they have played together for so long. They know each other so well. And I think that they'll have the edge. I think Canada will give them a little bit of heat, but I don't think that... I think England will outlast them very easily.
I think, what is it? England are now 28 wins in a row. Like, even when they're having bad days, they find way to win games. And I think the way they match up for me with Canada is really based around the set piece. I think they both have some similar strength. I think England have a much more well-rounded game than Canada, better kicking game, but I think they'll mold them in the forwards. And I think that's where Canada get a lot of reward. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why they're going to struggle, is because I think England's going to nullify a lot of their strengths and then probably will have control of the game. I think with England, you've had the feeling that it's a lot of pressure on them. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, they're favorites, they're undefeated for how many games? Everyone turns up, throws the kitchen sink at them, and they're getting by, but I don't think they've played their best rugby either. And, like, I do think there's more from them. It'll be a big, you know, question mark of how they play in this semi-final. Will it be conservative pressure, just win, or will they go out there and just blow the doors off Canada? That's kind of what I want to see, but I do think there is a clear gap that England are a better side than Canada at the moment.
I think it's exciting because everyone will play their best against England, and they'll step up to the challenge, just like when you go and play New Zealand. So I hope Canada do that. And one interesting matchup for me will be, because England's kicking game is so strong, but Canada actually have a really strong back three, and they've worked really well together, and their wingers have scored a lot of tries for them. And then also, the 13s for both outside centers. Corrigan for Canada has been a standout player for me. She's had tons of line breaks, just confident with ball in hand. But then you have Emily Skerrett on the other side, and she is a seasoned veteran and World Player of the Year, and it's just going to be a great matchup. I'm excited to see it.
No, definitely. Let's get on to the next one. And I know this one's getting you excited. Here. You've got the Black Ferns from New Zealand at home taking on France. Like, this is a tasty game. So this has to be, to me, the game of the tournament so far, on paper at least. And what are your thoughts coming into it?
You've heard me talk about New Zealand's attack, and they have just stepped it up a notch. They are on form. They are gelling. They are a well-rounded squad, and their back line is... I just enjoy watching them. But you're playing against France, who are the best defensive team in the tournament. They've only had 2 tries scored against them in 4 games. 0 in the last 160 minutes. That is insane. It doesn't matter even the caliber of team you're playing, to not let a try in 2 full 80-minute matches is pretty impressive, right? We saw New Zealand play Japan right before the lead up to this tournament, and Japan scored 2 tries on them. Japan ranked 13th in the world, right? So, like, France, that is just impressive. And they are putting shots in as well. So, I don't know. Attack versus D. What do you got?
The way they defended England. Like, right. You know what I mean? One try after all that possession and territory England had. Like, that is pretty phenomenal. You know, Wayne Smith, the coach for the Black Ferns, he even mentioned that tackle count and that defensive thing against England, like how impressed he was by that. I think it's setting new standards for the women's game of where defense can go. And I really think that's what France are leaning on right now. They have good players. They can finish tries. They did run up a score against Italy eventually. But I do feel like their attack's been a bit stunted since losing their 9. And since that injury happened, not quite had the same danger. They've still got the fun, like the pieces that they had. They're just slightly off an attack and relying on that defense. And that's going to be the question for me. Can they defend this Black Ferns? Because, you know, I was, you know, a little bit maybe slower to get on the bandwagon than you were with how good their attack was. But just rewatching some of their game against Wales on the weekend, mate, they are starting to absolutely pop off. Like, they're cooking. Yeah. Like, you know, as soon as that ball gets to the back line with time and space, the ability of the forwards to move it out the back, to find the space on the edge, the finishes they have, Portia Woodman scoring tries for fun. Now the highest ever try scoring at a World Cup ever. Congratulations, Portia. That is an incredible stat, and I'm sure she's going to add some more to that tally.
Has to.
Too. But I do think that the Black Ferns are starting to hit stride, and it's like just at the right time. Like, they, you know, they didn't, like, a year ago, they were getting pumped by England. Everyone was like, you know, who is this team? Are they going to be good enough for this World Cup? But when you look at the coaches they have, that is top level coaching. And they've had a lot of time together, and they're getting better and better with each game. And this France test is going to be massive. Home crowd, Hakka, all the intensity. Like, come on, you're covering it on CNBC. Like, I think that is going to be an incredible game. And I don't know which way it's going to go. I don't want to predict. I think Black Ferns probably favour a little bit, just because I think they'll score more points.
For sure.
But just never know with France, mate. Their game at World Cups, always. You just can't write them off.
I think one thing we haven't talked about, though, is New Zealand have rotated their squad so well throughout pool play because they're so squad deep, and maybe they had a better pool, didn't have to play their top team, whereas France have played a very similar lineup, and that's a lot of minutes under those legs for those bodies. They've had a few injuries we've touched on, but fresh versus tired, 80 minutes, semi-final rugby, you got to do or die with your best, but that is going to be a factor, where New Zealand, most of their starting lineup have only played 120 minutes of rugby so far.
I feel you, mate. Like, I feel you. Like, we've both been to World Cups. It takes a toll on the body back to back, that intensity as well. So, you know, that could be a factor. All right. That's pretty much, you know, the semi-finals sort of wrapped up. But just to put you on the spot, Abby, as we like to do on this show, who are you picking as your World Cup winner right now, looking at it?
I mean, I'm just going to throw it out there for New Zealand to win. I don't know if it's just to rival your decision or I'm picking the home crowd. I think it's going to be a 2017 rematch of the final. And for me, how I've seen it play out so far, I think semifinals will be a great test, and we could probably have a little more firm decision after, but I got to go Black Ferns to lift that trophy.
It's not a bad pick. We've already had a discussion, but I'll say it on the pod. I just think this is England's comp. Black Ferns are the spanner in the works to that for me. They're the only team that I think could really do it. But I just feel England's pack. I feel like New Zealand's pack isn't quite at the level England's are. And in a final, if it's a tight game, differences or a mismatch there can skew it in England's favour. But we've seen the way New Zealand can score tries. Like, sometimes that can just erase all that set-piece dominance with two quick tries. So, we'll see. Should we have a little wager or something on this one? What do you reckon?
I would just like to throw it out that such a classic prop statement to think that the forwards will make the difference in the World Cup final. And I played forward in 15s as well, but I just think we have to acknowledge that.
That is 15s, Felipe. I always say, if you can't scrum, you can't win trophies, mate.
You would say.
Yeah, I know. That's what I tell everyone I coach.
That's chase your bills.
It's true. This is the scrum down. So we'll keep it that way. But now, Abby, that about sums up this, Rugby World Cup 2021 chat. Thanks for your time. Good luck this weekend on the coverage with Lee Diffie. We'll look forward to seeing it out there on CNBC. And a reminder to everyone that all of the semi-finals are live and on demand with Peacock TV. Great to have Abby on. Great insight, and also got to respect her honesty. She doesn't pull any punches. And I think, this is the sort of time where you've got to start reflecting and looking at these things. When a World Cup doesn't go well, I've been in unsuccessful World Cups myself. It is really a chance to reflect, to see what can you do better. How do we improve, especially with all that's at stake for the United States? As we talked about, everybody in this country wants to see rugby go well. And these are some of the hard questions that need to be asked. No fault to the players or their effort. But when you look at the results, and sports as a results-based business, these are sort of the discussions that need to happen. But now let's turn from the women's game to the men's game, as we've got Bryce Campbell on from In Camp in Dubai to talk Rugby World Cup qualification and the upcoming repechage. We are joined by USA Rugby player Bryce Campbell from Dubai as the United States are getting ready for their opening game of the repechage. Bryce, welcome to the Scrum Down.
Oh, thanks for having me, Corbs. Appreciate it.
And obviously, Bryce, these are three very, very important games for the United States. But before we get into those games, you guys have had a bit of time together in camp at the moment. Can you just talk a little bit about the preparations, especially for the domestic-based squad, who've had a bit more time than usual before one of these competitions?
We've been lucky to have a really good run-up. We had a two-week camp in Colorado, which we were lucky enough to have yourself there with us, pushing us in the forward pack, Corbs. And then a week off. And then we've been in South Africa for the past 3 weeks, 2 weeks in Bloemfontein, played against the Cheetahs and the Pumas, and then a week in Cape Town, scrimmaged Western Province, and now we're here in Dubai, ready to go.
And how was the South Africa trip? Obviously, thanks. I loved coaching you guys in Denver. But yeah, how has the development gone? Have you seen a progression from game to game? What's sort of the mood of the squad?
I think we're in a really good place. We said before we went, it wasn't about the results. It was about us figuring out our systems, getting quite a few people some playing time, working some combinations. And I think we really got that. There was a considerable improvement, at least in our set piece from game one to game two. And then there are a couple of really, really good teams. And we'll be facing good teams here in Dubai as well. But I think we were able to test ourselves pretty well in different areas of the game and came out feeling really good.
And how valuable is it to test yourself against pretty high-end opposition, which is probably the best sort of prep you could have had before these three big...
Dogs are an important part of our lives. That means protecting them from parasites. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus, Afoxolaner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're delicious and easy to give. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive. Ask about NexGard Plus Chews.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Games coming up.
I think it'll be invaluable. You know, hopefully just get the job done and we'll look back and we'll know how important it was. And now we just got to put our heads down and get the job done. Another piece of it was we were able to get pretty on close to the time zone here in Dubai. So it's only been a 2-hour change from when we were in South Africa, which is a massive plus, because if we had been coming from the States, it'd be 8 to 11 hours for some. So.
And then when you look at, you know, the games coming up in Dubai, opening game against Kenya, what are you expecting from them?
Kenya will be filled with big, strong athletes. A lot of them will have sevens background, so they won't be scared to run the ball from anywhere. They'll try to win one-on-one battles with physicality. And we're just going to have to front up physically. That's what we're really, really going to have to do is front up to the big, strong carriers and you know, manage a couple of those speedsters. So we hope that we can be really organized to deal with that.
And then when you look at, you know, the games, obviously this is sort of last chance saloon for the United States. Like, how different is the mood, the vibe to rolling into the Chile games in the summer at the moment?
Look, we found out that we're going to have to put out a really good performance no matter who we're playing against. You know, Chile's grown massively over the past 3-4 years, and we probably underestimated them quite a bit, and showed up and got beat on home soil. So now it's do or die, and we think we've come prepared, but we'll find out. I think we'll be pleasantly surprised.
And are you guys feeling a lot of pressure here? You know, it would be a travesty for you guys not to be in the World Cup. You know, is that a motivating factor? Does it bring nerves? What has that sort of been doing to you and the squad?
There's definitely pressure, but we're just trying to take things one thing at a time. We've got a game against Kenya, and that's our focus right now. We know we can go out and win that game, and then we'll just go from there. I think we've gotten back to really enjoying the game, especially just training over the past few weeks. We've had a lot of fun on the training field, and that's something that we probably didn't have necessarily in the lead to Chile and Uruguay before. And hopefully you guys will be able to see that come game time, us enjoying ourselves and making things happen.
And then when you look at sort of the coaching that you've been able to have in this time, you know, you've been able to bring in some very well established and experienced coaches to add to Gary Gold and Stephen Brett. You've had Plumtree, who's coming fresh off being an All Blacks coach. And then you've got Mario Ledesma, who's a legend of the game, head coach, scrum guru. What's that been like in the camp to have those sort of resources around?
We've got all the pieces to the puzzle. Like you said, we've got world-class coaching. We've had the right preparation. It's just been really nice to go to people that have done it and that have been to World Cups, that have coached at high levels. And we have the resources we need to get the job done. Now it's just up to us to do it.
And then my last question is, you know, you finally got your internationals into camp. You had a lot of time preparing with just your domestic-based players. Like, how much of a boost is it having them in? And, you know, how quickly are you able to get them up to speed and on page with everything you've been doing?
It's incredible to have the six guys join us. Today was, you know, we just got in this morning. So it's been a quick one getting them up to speed. But the biggest thing is just welcoming them back into the group. You know, they probably felt a little bit on the outside of it because they couldn't have joined us when we started. But now, just getting them into the mix, making them feel comfortable, and we'll get them up to speed quickly, but more just making them feel welcome and excited about what's to come.
And then lastly, you know, Bryce, I know you're a passionate man on the field. Just touch a little bit on the passion and the pride that you're going to represent your country with as you lace up the boots and sing that anthem this weekend.
It'll be pretty special. This is, you know, it's like I said earlier, it's do or die, and we're going to demonstrate what it means. It's the union on the line. It's a lot of guys are on turning points in their careers, and we need to get this job done so that we can punch our ticket to the World Cup. And yeah, hopefully you guys will see that and the way we play and the way you look at us when we're on the TV, and the emotion we show when we make the big hits. So it'll be good.
Can't wait to watch it, mate. Good luck this weekend, and thanks for your time again.
No worries. Thanks for having me on, Corpse.
Great insight from Bryce, and great to have you know, some words from what's going on inside the camp there. They've got a lot on their plate over these next 3 weeks. Kenya first, then Hong Kong, then Portugal. Lots to keep an eye on there, as obviously we have the Rugby World Cups here on NBC Sports. Really hoping that the United States are able to qualify. You can feel that they are a little bit under pressure, but also an opportunity to get off to a good start against Kenya and build some momentum. We'll keep an eye on those results and check in with them next week. But for now, that's it on this week's show. Thank you to everyone for all the support. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Reminder to keep favoriting, sharing, retweeting, telling your friends about the pod. Lots more to keep coming as the Rugby World Cup 2021 unfolds. Still got Premiership Rugby across Peacock TV in the US. And then also we'll keep an eye on this Rugby World Cup repechage. But that's a wrap for now. So thanks again to everyone for listening and watching. We'll see you again next time.
Dogs are an important part of our lives, and keeping them protected is a top priority, especially against nasty parasites. That's why you gotta check out NexGard Plus, efoxaconazole, moxidectin, and pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection that kills fleas and ticks, prevents heartworm disease, plus it treats and controls roundworms and hookworms. That's a whole lot of protection packed into a delicious beef-flavored, soft chew designed to make monthly dosing easy and enjoyable. So the next time you're at the vet, ask about NexGard Plus Chews. They're the one-and-done monthly parasite protection you want for your dog. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.